Ah, greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives, whether we want to or not. And remember, my friend, these future events will affect you. The future is in your hands.
Welcome to What a Week, KSQD's Listener's Digest of all the news from this last week that you really need to know. I'm Tony Russomano.
And I'm Eric Nelson, and have we got a show for you.
Now, you can't be well informed unless you are informed well. And that's where What a Week comes in.
For the next hour, we're going to dive deep into what's been going on over the last 7 days, giving you a quick rundown of what's happening here in Santa Cruz and in the rest of the world.
And because sometimes you just want to get away from it all, we'll play you some music designed to soothe your soul and bring a smile to your face.
So turn up that radio, fire up that internet browser, and get ready for another edition of KSQD's What a Week.
What's that mellow sound in the background? That would be Bill Evans. And Bill Evans is heralding the imminent arrival of Miles Davis. And why are we playing Miles Davis? Well, Tony, it's Miles Davis's 98th birthday.
Oh, you should have told me. I would have gotten him a cake.
Gotten him a cake, yep.
Yeah.
So attention must be paid. Yesterday was Bob Dylan's 83rd birthday.
I did get him a cake.
There's something in the water for geniuses in late May, don't you think?
Well, it's typical birthing time, isn't it? You know, Criswell was, I think, born in May also. The person who starts out our show with a piece of Criswellian logic each day, which kind of cleans the cobwebs out of our brains.
That'll be the last time that Criswell, Bob Dylan, Miles Davis will ever be uttered in the same sense.
There's always next week.
So, we got to go to a party, right? What a Week was actually invited. They didn't check the guest list as closely as they should have, and we got to go to the Lookout Pulitzer party.
Those are two words that are full of meaning. Lookout Pulitzer. Lookout won the Pulitzer Prize for breaking news reporting. And this is a big deal, friends. This is like the Nobel Prize of reporting.
And they had an all-staff hands-on-deck celebration party and invited a few people, and then some people slipped in through the door just because we heard there was free food and champagne. But it was great, and it was great to see their great office, which is sort of above, across the street and above Bookshop Santa Cruz. And good time was had by all, and I might point out, still no local publication. I'm looking at you. Good Times, San Francisco Chronicle, and yes, even the Sentinel has done a feature, an actual homegrown article celebrating this wonderful thing. It's such a great story.
That's why it's really a big deal that they're not doing it, because it is a fantastic story.
The idea that stealth, Tamsin, the editor, without telling anybody, put together the entry and then sent it in and didn't tell anybody. And then when this phenomenal thing happened, then let everybody know, hey, I'm going to get you on a Zoom call tomorrow morning. We've got some big news. Everybody thinks they're about to be fired.
Of course, everybody's doing the resume faxing, or resume sending,
and then they
recent
find
history,
out right? that their lives have changed irrevocably
for the much, much better. Yeah, having that on your resume. Not that anybody is going anywhere from Lookout. There, that is a fine institution, a great publication online for news. Along with a couple of other publications here, Santa Cruz Local is doing a fine job. Different emphasis in town, but you know we're coming along. I think we're trying to make up for the deficit that has been caused by the plundering of the once proud. Maybe it wasn't once proud, but at least the once well staffed Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Yeah, it went from the Santa Cruz Sentinel to the Santa Cruz Senile, pretty much thanks to Alden Hedge Fund. But we won't dwell on that. So local news. Besides that great news from last week, Tony, what's up? I understand we're having some issues with our local critters, and I hate to say it, a lot of them are dying of starvation.
Yeah,
it does not sound good.
That's right. It is not good. Here are two stories that may sound unrelated, but so far no one has come up with the connection yet until now. First of all, KNTV, yeah, that's NBC Bay Area, reported that hundreds of dead sea lion pups are washing up on Año Nuevo Island. That's just off the San Mateo, Santa Cruz County border. You know, Año Nuevo has, you know, that great tour to see the sea lions.
Absolutely.
Birthing. Well, for some reason this year, hundreds and hundreds of dead baby sea lions have been washing up on the beach, and pups. They're not carrying disease. Necropsies have been conducted. Scientists are, you know, as usual, perplexed. But they also are noticing that that the baby sea lions, the pups, are malnourished. Well, combine that with a story that appeared in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, where a record number, far, far, far above the previous record number of California brown pelicans are turning up on beaches in Santa Cruz County, and in fact throughout most of the Central California coast. It's been, you know, the number of sick pelicans has been declining in the past week or so, but it did hit a record to the point where the animal rescue organizations, Native Animal Rescue, which is leading the effort, they rescued 200 pelicans from mid-April to mid-May. That is, according to the Sentinel, 163 more than it cared for in 2020 and 2021 combined. So most of the sick pelicans came from the main beach and Cowell Beach here in Santa Cruz. So again, scientists perplexed, but they're finding that that these pelicans are also malnourished. The thinking now is that because of El Nino, La Nina, climate change, hexes being placed upon the waters of Santa Cruz, who knows, that the pelicans are finding it difficult to discover the fish that they need. Pelicans dive from like 200 feet up, and they can see underwater. They can see the fish. Well, for some reason, they're having trouble apparently seeing the fish, just as the sea lion pups are having trouble apparently finding their food stuff. So these two things are happening. If you do find a stranded animal, don't approach it. Don't try to rescue it yourself. You can call Native Animal Rescue in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz SP. PCA, we'll put you in touch with them also. So it's a big problem, a big problem.
I saw a piece. It's weirdly, I think, could it be related? The Guardian in the UK. The Guardian did an article last week about set here where sea otters have been observed using tools to pry more food out. Are you aware of this?
Yes. That's an interesting story.
I mean, it's interesting. It made like the British. Prestigious
exactly.
paper, and it was based on someone's research who's a student up here at UC Santa Cruz.
That's right. And the reason it made the British paper and apparently has not been picked up locally is because the fact that the otters are using tools is not new. Anyone who's seen an otter in Monterey Bay has seen the otter, you know, floating around on his back, you know, and it's got a clam.
We have
there.
One that uses surfboards.
Surfboards, right?
We've been
eating
footage.
The surfboards, right?
Yeah.
So, that one is, an anomaly, and she's doing well along with her pup, but what is new is that the researcher at UC Santa Cruz discovered that the otters that are using tools are predominantly female otters.
Well, duh.
That are, what do you mean, duh?
Well, obviously smarter.
Because, I see. I thought you were going to tell us, because the females belong in the kitchen. They're doing the cooking.
Is that what you said, Tony?
No, that's not what I said.
How could you possibly say such a sec? Did you hear that, people? Did you hear what he just said? My God, Tony.
No. What do you think I am, a Supreme Court justice?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is because females are smaller than the males, and they have some trouble with their teeth, using their teeth to open the clam shells. And the otters have discovered, through trial and error, I suppose, and eventual breeding, that it impacts their teeth. They crack their teeth if the female otters, the smaller otters, try to bite down on the clam shells to open them. So the females have developed the technique of using a rock tool. That's what the story is. But according to, the UK paper, it was like, otters use tools. No. Got to read the whole thing. Turn the page, as, a very famous writer
having observed you at the Swan Oyster Depot trying to crack into some food, it's not a pretty sight.
I have the cap teeth to to prove it.
Yes, you do. So other scientific news that somehow feels to me relevant to Santa Cruz. For the first time on record, cannabis has outpaced alcohol as the daily drug of choice for Americans.
Hey, come on, you drunks. Let's get
on the stick here. In 2022, there were 17.7 million people reported using cannabis either every day, along with 14.7 million reported using alcohol with the same frequency. Now, how many use both cannabis and the Venn diagram of both alcohol and cannabis? Well, further deponent sayeth not here. But I wonder where they did this survey. If they did the survey, I'm just wondering if this was on the Pacific Avenue Mall or the Staff of Life parking lot to get some of these numbers.
Now, you're going by old images of the Santa Cruz Mall years ago.
Watch out, though. Watch out. KSQD Core Demo included present company in the room.
Hey.
As more places legalize marijuana, policymakers and health officials are worried about the health risks it may pose to adolescents, but a new study suggests an additional demographic at risk, seniors.
No, that's
yep.
right.
And then beside,
that's right.
Yep, that basically in Canada, which has been legalized pot, the number of emergency room visits for cannabis poisoning has risen sharply among people 65 and older. Quote, it's often a baked good, a chocolate, or a gummy. People eat too many of them or don't know that they're lethal and eat a whole bag watching Matlock or something, and then all of a sudden this happens.
Here's a tip, friends. If a friend of yours is in the passenger seat of a car and you're driving to a movie and your friend turns around, you're in the back seat, offers you an open bag, and says, here, eat one. Do not eat two or three.
As something that a Maureen Dowd of the New York Times might have thought of before she...
evidence of my own sordid history. But I don't do marijuana anymore. It's too strong.
You don't do marijuana?
Well, I do pot.
You don't do it?
I don't use edibles. I don't smoke pot.
You're high on the real thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Powerful gasoline, a clean windshield, and a shoe shine. Yes, we understand.
Thank you, Fire Sign.
All right. Let's play some music here. Take a little break. I don't know... it seems appropriate at this juncture. A new album, as often we like to play new music, by Kim Ritchie, called Every New Beginning. This is a peppy little number. You're listening to What a Week on KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQD Prunedale.
He's Eric. I'm Tony.
And here's Kim.
Everybody owes him money. Yeah, he's an angel on a motorbike in the land of milk and honey. Talk of the neighborhood. He's screaming up and down the side streets, 'cause it makes him feel so good.
That's nice. Yeah, is that new?
Yeah, brand new. Came out yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Man, has anyone told you you've got good taste in music?
No. Hasn't anyone told there's a lot of good music that's coming out
that's
these
excellent days?
Yeah. Well, speaking of arts and entertainment, as we speak, they're announcing all the awards at the Cannes Film Festival, and so far it does not look good for Francis Ford's Megalopolis.
Why not?
No, actually gotten no awards. They haven't given out the Palme d'Or yet, but they've given just about everything else, so we'll update you. But something I've noticed that I want to bring to people's attention. So the new metric now on the trades, the Hollywood trades and reporting, is what I call the Cannes standing ovation-o-meter.
It's not what a week?
It's not what a week. Huh. So it's always been a tradition that after a film, all the excitable French people who celebrate cinema and, yes, the films of Jerry Lewis applaud. So now what's happening...
It's hard to applaud holding a cigarette.
In this craving to basically do statistical analysis of art, which is why everyone's so obsessed with Emmys and Oscars, because it's a metric that, in essence, soulless corporate hacks can use to decide what they want to fund. Now the rating is how long does the standing ovation go on?
I've been
the trades are reporting.
Yeah.
No, it's a trend that's just started to slip in like a year or two ago.
No, I mean the stories are now reporting, and I was thinking, why are they reporting?
Because
how long
it's
the ovation
a metric.
Is?
It's a metric that dumb people use to try to evaluate art, basically.
Oh.
So now, of course, the question is, this Cannes Festival, what won? Well, Megalopolis got 8 minutes. The Substance, which is a body horror movie with Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley. Demi Moore is playing kind of a Demi Moore type aging but still beautiful woman who wants to recapture her youth. So she drinks a substance that allows her to be young, but the way it works is basically, Margaret Qualley crawls out of her back with lots of gore and blood. This, by the way, is directed by a woman director who just won Cannes for Best Screenplay. But I digress. You'll just watch out for this one coming. That got 11 minutes. It was the highest rated one. And Furiosa, the George Miller sequel to Fury Road, got just 7 minutes. So I'm just pointing this there. I've just made a big point about how invalid it is, and now I'm reporting it like it matters, which it doesn't. But what does matter is the box office. This is perhaps the lowest opening for Memorial Day movie in 41 years. Furiosa.
What does that mean? Why?
Basically, big tentpole movies that come out. This is the weekend, Memorial Day.
Oh, the summer movies.
Everybody
I
goes
see.
To movies. Uh-huh. Furiosa was the headliner, the top movie, and it's the lowest opener ever. It did between 31 and 35 million, and the trades are contemplating how the holy heck did that happen?
Yeah.
And smart people on Mark Harris, for instance, who writes for New York and good writer, said, everyone will have a different takeaway from this number, but I'm not sure which ones are right. But two that I'll mention, A, movie stars still matter, and prequels create less sense of urgency than sequels do.
Okay, I get that.
Somebody else wrote that the dim box office tells me that the current business model isn't working. You can't simply argue that we need better movies. The average moviegoer simply doesn't see the appeal of seeing something opening weekend when they know it's going to be on Netflix in 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
That's overthinking it. No, yeah, if there's a lot of hype on a movie, people still want to see it. By the way, we do have the winners in here from the
Palme d'Or isn't in yet.
It is.
What is it?
I just got it.
Anora
is the winner. The Grand Prix winner is All We Imagine as Light. Jury prize went to Emilia Perez. The Prix Especial was The Seed of the Sacred Fig.
Yeah, and the writer of, whoever came up with the idea of Margaret Qualley crawling out of Demi Moore's back with lots of blood and gore, got Best Screenplay. So further deponents sayeth not. Oh, is it time for our favorite feature, Thrush, doing some side swipes at our favorite villain, Elon Musk? Why, yes. What does Thrush stand for, he asked rhetorically?
Thrush, the technological hierarchy for the removal of undesirables and the subjugation of humanity.
The circuit board at the station just blew out with that. Well, first off, Beta Breakers was last week, and this was, in fact, breaking news that a group of nine funsters who every year come up with thematic costumes to the race, this year they decided to go as, wait for it, a cyber truck.
Oh, really? Did they all have deflated sneakers?
Yeah, they all dressed up with cardboard as a cardboard cyber truck.
So the real thing then?
As it was labeled. I will spell this because we have to be careful because those seven deadly words. Oh, yeah. As it was labeled on them, CYBERFUX. I don't know quite what that really meant. Yeah. And they had license plates, Tony, on these things. My favorite was, again, I wonder what this stands for. Yeah. D. Are you writing, ready to write down at home, folks?
I'll try to come.
D-U-S-H-B-G.
Dush big?
Yeah, I can't understand what that was. And another one was Compen. C-O-M-P-N-S-8. It sounds like compensate.
Free.
I have no idea what those acronyms. Yeah, dush, big, and compensate.
Free snakes.
Yeah.
Comp snakes.
And it's one of these people said, I like my Tesla, but I hate Elon. And you can quote me. Oh, we've just done that. So speaking of it, you know, we like to bash Cybertrucks, but a guy, David Roth, wrote in The Defector. He did a whole column saying, have you seen a Cybertruck yet?
Oh, yeah.
So let's start. I'll start, Tony. This will be a read it for you. The Cybertruck was made not to look like other cars and trucks, which is a statement that would scan as a compliment if you hadn't seen a Cybertruck.
Yeah. I know that this vehicle was a boondoggle, that Tesla can barely manage to manufacture it at all, let alone properly, and that it will power all the way down like a stressed-out C-3PO if run through a car wash, and ages like brass if left out overnight in the rain.
The Cybertruck is mostly, but not entirely, car-shaped. It is stiff and very gray and looks like a home electronics looked when Bill Clinton was president. It's both jankily long and too upright for its amusingly normal-sized tires in a way that makes them look like small, cheap dress shoes.
It looks like if Hot Wheels made a VHS rewinder. Or imagine a neck-roll-equipped NFL fullback from 1995 who gets himself into a frankly risky steroid program and simultaneously stops working out, and you are maybe some of the way there in terms of the proportion.
Yep. So, ladies and gentlemen, the Cybertruck. Wow. But Musk is no laughing matter, sadly, and this really hits close to home. Media Matters for America is a registered nonprofit that has been watching Fox News and right-wing media like a hawk for years and years, and it has driven Fox crazy. Unfortunately, they made a mistake, and it wasn't a mistake, but they reported in November about the pro-Nazi content on Musk. Platform X, basically the fact that he bought Twitter and turned it into a swamp of neo-Nazis, and they reported and showed the receipts. So what does Musk do? He sued them in Texas, and they just announced Thursday that because they're confronting this legal assault on so many fronts, they had to lay off 12 of their people who are reporting the news. Not because they're going to lose the lawsuit, just because Elon Musk is suing them to try to crush them, just like Peter Thiel did with Gawker, these vengeful, what did the license plate say? Dushbug?
Dushbug, I think them. It's a Volkswagen something.
Basically, yeah. You know. Those,
it doesn't matter if the lawsuit is going to win or lose in court. That's not the point. The point is to require the company that's being sued to hire very expensive lawyers to defend themselves.
And what's frustrating is that Media Matters has, very high return on investment, and it's so high that not only did Musk go after it, but two Republican attorney generals went after it. And someone said, this is a good case study in the perennial liberal donors get bored and don't build story, i.e., where are our billionaires supporting Media Matters? You know, this is an absolutely vital public service organization that's done great work, and Musk just forced them to get rid of 12 people. So when we go after Elon Musk, it's not just because he designs cars that look like they were steroid-charged 1995 fullbacks. It's because he's truly a bad guy.
Well, he can come after us for saying that and, you know, sue us for all we're worth, which is at this point like a half-empty Bic pen. Well,
no, they can have my entire salary working at this station.
Oh, double it.
And New York Times, my favorite outlet, does a piece today, big piece about the malign influence that Musk may have in the presidential election, because now He regularly posts to his, get ready, 184 million followers. He's now posted 40 negative times about Biden this year, compared to 30 times for all of last year. And last month at a dinner party in L.A., Musk, along with, yes, Rupert Murdoch and venture capitalist Peter Thiel, discussed how to oppose Mr. Biden's reelection. So they actually got together, the evil cabal of Thrush members.
Pretty much do what they're still doing, right? Yeah, just keep it up.
Yeah, so thanks a lot for that, people. So another story that's being reported I'll get you in the door. Red Lobster, right? The place where you get all-you-can-eat seafood. And I do love this to get us in the mood of Red Lobster. One of America's finest cultural institutions thinly disguised the Red Lobster chain as the, quote, frying Dutchman. And this scene ensued.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but everything on the menu has fish in it.
What about the bread? Does that have much fish in it?
Yes.
Oh, I have some Tic Tacs in my purse.
Excellent choice. And for the gentleman?
All you can eat! All you can eat!
All right, when you're ready, take this plate over.
Please, don't take the steam tray, sir! That man ate all our shrimp and two plastic lobsters!
Tis no man. Tis a remorseless eating machine. Arr.
Yes, but
brilliant.
Where was I? The report that's been on is 99 locations of Red Lobster are being auctioned off, and basically the place is starting to shut down. And the journos, the lazy journos, said the shrimp did it.
Yeah, blame the shrimp.
$11 million a year was lost because of Homer Simpson and the endless shrimp diet. Lots of ha-ha comments, including in my favorite paper of record, the New York Times. Today has yet another piece in today's paper about Red Lobster and America's fixation with gluttony and all you can eat. Mm-hmm. But last week, an actual journal of record did a thing that said, well, what's really happened is, wait for it, because of Red Lobster's high costs and declining profits, the company's owner sold it off 10 years ago for $1.2 billion to Golden Gate Capital. Drum roll, please. Basically one of those kind of hedgy, fundy type equity groups. And what they immediately did, what Golden Gate did, was they sold off, a.k.a. this is what Alden Hedge did to the Sentinel and all their papers they bought. They sold out their most valuable asset, the real estate and the restaurants, as a sale leaseback. And they basically made back the money they paid for Red Lobster, but shackled Red Lobster with insupportable debt, which
and
is
in
why
fact,
they're
they,
shutting
they
down.
They sold it to Alden Capital, our good friends Alden Capital, now owners of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, or what once was a Santa Cruz Sentinel, poor emaciated thing that it is. Yeah, and Alden tried to do the same thing. Basically, anything left, you know, if it's not nailed down, we'll sell it. And we can pry it up, it's not nailed down.
Well, the frustrating thing, again, is the reporting. You go to the New York Times today, there's an editorial about this sort of, oh, ho, ho, Red Lobster. Washington Post did the piece, but if you look at the receipts, that's totally not the story. The story,
right.
It's just an easy excuse for us, of course, to play a great Simpsons audio clip.
Well,
but
true,
there,
true.
There's that.
There is
but,
that, yeah.
You know, that
worth
that
it
allows
by
to do that.
So much. But why are people eating shrimp, for crying out loud? You know, the carbohydrate level in shrimp, why would anyone gluttonize themselves into oblivion with all you can eat shrimp? Lobster, I can understand. You know?
Again, I'm getting yet another call back to you at the Swan Oyster Depot. Further deponent saith.
Now, what's wrong with oysters?
Yeah, okay, there we go. That little bib you had on, it was quite appealing.
Quite a large bib. Right?
Well, speaking of great reporting, so this week in the Supreme Court, Judge Samuel Alito, who blamed his wife for the insurrection flag, the upside-down American flag from January 2021. Well, surprise, surprise, surprise. Last summer, she did it again. She did it again, he said, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. They flew the Appeal to Heaven flag, which is another thinly veiled symbol of far-right Christian extremism, and that was outside of his summer home in Long Beach Island, and there they have the papers and the receipts. So,
well, how did they find this out?
A neighbor took a picture of it, but what just broke here this morning was that the Washington Post had the insurrection flag was last week's week. It was just broken by the New York Times.
Right.
A Washington Post reporter found it in January of 2021 and didn't report it.
What?
Yes, that is true. They did not report the thing because the paper decided it was not a story.
The Washington Post.
This is a quote from the article in the Washington Post. The Post decided not to report on the episode at the time because the flag raising appeared to be the work of Martha Ann Alito rather than the justice and was connected, according to her, with the neighbors. It was not clear then that the argument was rooted in politics.
An upside-down American flag
in front of a Supreme Court justice. And they sat on the story for 3 years because it was, quote, not
okay, it
rooted.
Must have been like an intern reporter or something like that that came up with the story?
No.
It was, in fact, the Supreme Court reporter for the Washington
Robert
Post.
Robert Barnes.
Who had decades of experience covering the Supreme Court and... And the reason this story is coming out now, today, is because he recently retired and has just decided to spill the beans.
And as the internet said, the mainstream SCOTUS beat is rotten to the core. This story was not a story until they sat out on it today. And I love this. Cool asymmetry between it's not news because it was wife and Republican senators giving press conferences outside the Trump trial to go, this is where the judge's daughter sleeps. You know, that doesn't get reported either. Well, Paul Rudnick's in there Alito says his wife flew the Stop the Steal flag, but now there are photos of a Christian supremacist flag at the summer home. Now, this is where I think, Paul Rudnick, we may be going to hyperbole, but who knows? Alito also claims his swastika tramp stamp is, quote, just for fun, and that face of Hitler on Martha's thigh was, quote, a Girl Scout marriage badge thing.
I had to stop. When I read that, I had to stop and think, well, wait a minute. Now, is that Rudnick saying that, or is that like a true thing? Because I was prepared to believe that there is a swastika tramp stamp just for fun.
Then you may believe some of this. These are the gifts that Paul Rudnick says Alito gives his wife, Martha Ann, for their anniversary. I'll start.
Go ahead.
Confederate flag oven mitts.
A new pitchfork and a strawberry-scented torch.
A necklace reading, Stop the Steal. In blood diamonds.
Klan robes that say world's best mom.
And the one we all want, a spa day with Jimmy Thomas in Charlottesville.
Oh, cool.
Where both sides are good people.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'll leave the final bit, the capper on this was the New York Times, the Washington Post went on with in their story that sort of outed the now retired reporter who sat on that story. This is a great meet-cute story. Martha Ann Bumgardner was a law librarian in the office of U.S. Attorney in New Jersey when she met Alito, who was working as a federal prosecutor. Despite Alito's many trips to the library, he did not ask her out for more than a year, Martha Ann told the Washington Post ahead of the justice's confirmation hearing. He is judicious.
Oh, now she says, well, now look. I don't think it's fair to blame the reporter. I think this was an editor's decision
despite
the story.
But still, if people, a loyal listener of the show says I tend to be sour about both the New York Times and the Washington Post and mainstream reporting, in the immortal words of honorary correspondent for What a Week, no matter how cynical you are, it's hard to keep up. Well, we definitely need a musical break here, and a great person to do it. The great Sean McGowan of the Pogues passed away a few months ago, and a buddy of his, Bruce Springsteen, is in Ireland, playing shows in Ireland, and he was in Cork, Ireland last week, and he brought out this song as a final song, a Pogue song in honor of Shane McGowan. So if you ever want a nice little something nice to listen to after us ranting, this will definitely do it. So this is Bruce Springsteen just last week singing a song by Sean McGowan.
I've been loving you a long time. Down all the years and all the days. And I cried for all your troubles. Smiled at your funny little ways. We watched our friends grow up together. and we saw them as they fell. Some of them fell into heaven. Some of them fell into hell. I took shelter from a shower, and I stepped into your arms. On a rainy night in Soho, the wind was whistling all its charms. I sang you all my sorrows. You told me all your joys. Whatever happened to that old song? To all those little girls and boys. Sometimes I'd wake up in the morning, the ginger lady by my bed, covered in a cloak of silence. I'd hear you talking in my head. I'm not singing for the future, and I'm not dreaming of the past. I'm not talking of the first time. I never think about the last. Now the song is nearly over. We may never find out what it means. Still there's a light I hold before me. You're the measure of my dreams, the measure of
our cultural ambassador. Gotta send him around the world to sort of prop up our image internationally.
And Bruce Springsteen said that Shane McGowan was one of his favorite all-time writers, and he showed us why and how.
Great arrangement, too. Oh, you know what? It's been a while since we've heard this.
They come from the bowels of hell, a transformed race of walking dead, zombies guided by a master plan for complete domination of the earth.
amazing. I'm still walking.
Well, yeah, I guess we have some good news. We could have also done a chud for this guy, but the sedition panda at the same time that
he may have been sedated.
Mrs. Alito is hanging her upside down flag that is just, I guess, just part of a neighborly dispute, according to the Washington Post. Sedition panda was, storming the Capitol. And
why was he called Sedition Panda?
Because he was wearing a panda suit, a giant panda head.
Right.
And he basically stormed along with the thousands of other chuds, breached the perimeter, and then got into a fight with police officers, was pepper sprayed, and was ultimately handcuffed. And one of the worst tragedies, was he lost his costume panda head in the scuffle. Huh. But the sedition panda has just been convicted yesterday of assaulting a police officer, 12 guilty of 8 total charges. And the panda looks like he's going to get 12 years in the hoosegow unless Trump is elected, at which point all of them will be pardoned because, as we all know, according to Trump, they are hostages.
I guess the question should have been, why was he wearing a panda costume? But so many questions.
No. Another question, a bigger question. Yes. To what state, Tony, do you think a sedition panda was from? Take a wild guess.
Florida.
Yes. Florida man, of course. Of course. So that would be that. Well, speaking of the craven one, the Mango Mussolini, the anger avatar, Trump, you know, he keeps managing. Remember what I said about Lily Tomlin? It's hard to keep up. So he tweeted last week, Evan Gershkovich, who's the reporter from The Wall Street Journal, has now been in jail and was just snatched off the street, allegedly accused of being, quote, a spy. But he's a reporter who's a pawn in Putin's game, and he's been put in prison. And every right-thinking person on earth wants him out. So Trump tweeted last week that Gershkovich will be released almost immediately after the election, but definitely before I assume office. He will be, in caps, home, safe, and with his family. Why, says Trump? Because Vladimir Putin will do that for me, but not for anyone else. And in big caps, we will be paying nothing. So just think of what this guy has just done. This guy has basically said to Putin, keep the guy in, under no circumstances taking a deal. This guy, he just sentenced Gershkovich to basically through November at the very earliest for being in prison. He just added 6 months to his sentence because Putin's not going to negotiate now. Trump has, I mean, you talk about actionable. He's sitting in court for everything else. And the thing that's appalling, Tony, the lamestream media, as someone says, here I go getting all sour again, isn't reporting this. This isn't on the front page of every paper. That Trump basically has condemned a fellow reporter to an additional at least 6 months in jail. It's completely obvious.
Yeah, this is a replay of the Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter, Iran hostage delay, except that Trump is saying it out loud
in caps, and to a fellow journalist too. Is it being reported? Obviously not. So, well, what a week again. America's second finest news source. Well, we're on the subject of hostages. Let's play Nikki Haley. This is in February. Nikki Haley was running at that time against Donald Trump.
Donald Trump had a rally today. And in that rally, he mocked my husband's military service. And I'll say this. Donald, if you have something to say, don't say it behind my back. Get on a debate stage and say it to my face. If you mock the service of a combat veteran, you don't deserve a driver's license, let alone being president of the United States.
Yeah, I'm all for her. Yeah, I'm in 100%.
You're never going to guess what happened last week. She admitted, quote, she would vote for Trump in November.
But.
Yes, she basically is. Remember Ted Cruz. What did Trump say about his wife? Cruz's wife was ugly, and the troop's father killed JFK.
That's right. Yeah,
and
yeah,
Cruz is defending. What did he say about Mitch McConnell? Oh, Asian slur against his wife.
Yeah.
And they all can't support it. So these gutless, craven—
there were just so many, you know. He basically burned everyone, except when they come around, it's like, you're my good friend again.
And last week now at the trial, you know, we talked about at the trial, the Republican stooges, they're going now not to the B team, they're going to the C team. I'd mentioned a comparison between the Republican, the Speaker of the House, of course, J.D. Vance, our favorite, showing up dressed like Trump with a red tie in the suit, all saying the things that Trump can't say, otherwise he'll go be sent to Rikers. So they all made their statement. Lauren Boebert was there. Now, last week, well, it went down. Bernie Kerik, remember him, the Giuliani's pal, he showed up. My favorite, Joe Piscopo, showed
man.
Up. Yeah, he was there.
Wow.
And as Paul Rudnick says, he'll be appearing in the Eric Trump Starlight Lounge, by which I mean the vending machine on the third floor of the courthouse.
Oh, boy, he's going up then in his
career. Yeah, and okay, Rudnick, we got another one for you. We just can't quit you. And Rudnick goes on to say, with Joe Piscopo in the crowd, future Trump trial guests will be...
the remains of Rush Limbaugh in a hefty bag.
A leisure suit with vomit stains.
A photo of Jeffrey Epstein signed... to another defendant.
A bucket of pork rinds.
And Lara Trump twirling fire batons.
Yes, that could be the next thing. So, yeah, this is kind of what's going, you know, what has been going
on. Piscopo, boy, you really got to reach back quite a ways.
Yeah, you really got to get down there.
Like Bernie Kerik, you know, he's still in the news.
The thing, though, is that the rhetoric spread, you know, getting back to his, I'll just read the all caps from some of Trump's tweets here.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, this is just the all caps stuff about the New York trial. That filthy judge wants me ripped to shreds.
Democrats, right? Democrats will burn America to the ground just to see me behind bars.
These depraved savages won't stop until my family is destroyed and the MAGA movement is ripped to shreds.
I'll never surrender our country to Crooked Joe and the radical left.
And, you give a the rally, though, this is a great one. He did a rally in the Bronx. And so the MAGA media, looking at you, Elon Musk, as Twitter is, or X, whatever the hell they're calling it, 25,000 people, that's what Trump and all of those people are doing it. The odd thing, Tony, was they had a permit for 3,500, and the aerial photograph, you know, the photograph of the thing showed about 800 people there. But is it accepted as 25,000? Absolutely.
And probably three of them were actually from the Bronx.
But if you want to know what Trump had to say, we'll try to unpack this particular little soundbite.
Some of the greatest days of my business career were in the toughest times, but I enjoyed waking up every single morning and go to battle. A lot of people say to me today, the toughest business people that you know about, could I ask you a question? How do you do it? I say, do what? How do you get up in the morning and put your pants on? Where do you put the pants on? I'll explain it to you someday. How do you do it? How do you get up? How do you...
The tough people, those big people, they come to me with tears in their eyes and they
say, sir, how do you put your pants on?
Over my head like everyone else.
Yeah, where do you go? What do you say? But there's a place in the New York Times. Occasionally, the New York Times does get it right. And I think every Saturday, Thomas Edsel does a piece where he talks to academics, eggheads, about it's usually incredibly depressing because it's very smart people saying very dire things. But it did recap the 2024 Presidential Greatness Project, which released a survey, 154 current and former members of the president's and executive politics section of the American Political Science Association. So it reached out to 154 eggheads to rate the presidents. I'll go in order. Abraham Lincoln, 95%. FDR, 90%. George Washington, 90.32%, just under FDR. Teddy Roosevelt, 78%. And Thomas Jefferson, 77%. Guess who was dead last at 10.92?
Donald Jessica Trump.
That's right. But they go on to say, though, there's a difference between the idea of an effective president or a consequential one. And what the difference is a consequential president presides over seismic changes. And this is the one that the reporter says that what makes Trump different from previous presidents is in the past, the nation recovered from the, in essence, sponsored insurrection. Future presidents followed those who threatened democracy, and at the behest of citizens, they sought to bolster the institution and norms that had been trampled on. This moment is different. Despite various attempts at accountability, The fact is Trump will be the nominee of one of the two major parties for office, and he's in dead heat with the incumbent in the polls. You know, and that's the problem.
That's the problem, I think, with the New York Times is that they're, you know, these experts, the eggheads, they're listening to each other. They're reading the front page of the Times and they're believing it without question, without asking where does the information come from or how valuable is it in context. We seem to have gone from, you know, the cultural thought being we can't let this happen to sometime last week it changed to how could this have happened? You know, we're kind of some people are accepting this as a fait accompli that we, you know, there's nothing we can do. It's already happened. No, we cannot allow that idea to spread.
And, you know, what Trump is saying, again, they're not questioning the declare war on all migrants. His plan, the Stephen Miller, Gruppenfuhrer Stephen Miller's plan to deport, he's announced 15 million, I think he wants to deport. If he did that, it's the equivalent of the population of New York City, Chicago, and Los Angeles combined. It would cost $1 trillion to do it and require a force larger than the U.S. Army. Getting aside just the moral reprehensibleness, is that a phrase? It's probably reprehensitude of that. Yeah. Just the logistics of it are insane. But again, is this like daily front page news? Guy is saying, quote, on stage, we may not have an election after I win. I'm going to go after 15 million Americans and spend $1 trillion doing it. I'm going to, in my favorite, which we really haven't given way enough time, meeting a couple of weeks ago with oil executives and saying, if you donate $1 billion to me, I will reverse every single environmental law that prevents you from doing everything you want, a.k.a. I'm going to destroy the planet. Just give me $1 billion to do so.
Now, granted, he'd do it anyway just for fun, but if he can squeeze some money out of the deal, you know, even better.
Yeah. Okay, boy, if there's ever been a musical break needed, I think we need a musical break. Yeah, quick stat. So this is, again, brand new record. The Avett Brothers, called Orion's Belt, came out. Well, not last week, came out the week before, but we didn't get a chance
to. Is that a reference to Men in Black?
Yeah, Men in Black, but a brand new piece of music. This is What a Week on KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQT Prunedale. I would be Eric Nelson.
And I would be Tony Russomano.
And this, the Avett Brothers.
Changing hands, little bitty men with big plans.
Avett Brothers from new record, Orion's Belt. Well, Tony, we've talked about, we got into otters, we got into a secessionist panda. There's one more critter left, and that's orca. We did the story, kind of, I hate to say, far more gleefully than we should have about orcas ramming and sinking boats in the Mediterranean.
Why? But why? I mean, why was it too gleeful?
Well, just because there were yachts and rich people getting sunk by whales.
Your point.
Like, my point being. But there's some breaking news on this, and as you're our cute animal correspondent, well, give us a quick rundown of what news just came in on those orcas.
Orcas just want to have fun. That's the news. The orcas, it turns out, the ones that have been ramming the boats, they are juveniles that are playing. Kids. They're JDs, or juvenile delinquent orcas that are running around having a good time. They see a rudder on the boat. It's producing lots of bubbles. They think it's a toy. They approach it, and in a group, maybe 9 or 10 of them, start nosing the boat and eventually end up ramming it and sinking it because it looks like play to them. And the reason they're doing this now is because they've got lots of free time on their hands, just like any normal American teenager needs to get a job.
And they
right?
have a thing about rudders, too. The article says that it's not clear why orcas are attracted to rudders or how they became fascinated by them in the first place. You know, maybe stoned orcas, I'd point this out. But maybe that individual touched a rudder and felt it was something fun to play with. After playing, it began propagating the behavior among the group. You know, so we're talking about like a fad, like hula hoops for your generation, mm-hmm. Tony, or Tide Pods.
Tide Pods, there it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, Tide Pods.
And now the reason the orcas have this free time for all this play is that their food source, the bluefin tuna, has returned to the Iberian Peninsula, and they got plenty to eat. They don't need to spend all their time looking for food.
Well, it's compressed a lot in that hour. I think it's time for our boot heels to be wandering here. I'm Eric Nelson.
And I'm Tony Russomano.
And KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQD Prunedale. But, you know, it's kids, right? You know,
that kids. Yeah.
You got to ask, you know, what's the matter with kids?
With kids today.
Kids, I don't know what's wrong with these kids today. Kids, who can understand anything they say? Kids, they are disobedient, disrespectful oafs. Noisy, crazy, sloppy, lazy loafers. While we're on the subject, kids, you can talk and talk till your face is blue. Kids, but they still do just what they want to do. Why can't they be like we were, perfect in every way? What's the matter with kids today?
I could. Kids, all the things I've done were for your own good. Kids, can't you once appreciate how I've sacrificed working, slaving, scrimping, saving pennies, and living with your father? Kids, no one knows the burdens I've had to bear, and in my condition. Kids, I'm a poor sick woman, and does he care? Ha! Go on and kill me. That's what it's coming to. When a mother has kids like you.
Kids!
All the chicken soup that I made for you.
Mama, take it easy.
Kids!
Now you throw me out like a worn-out shoe.
Not in front of everybody, Mom. After all, I haven't been such an awful son. I never sash you back or leave a ring around the bathtub. And don't I always phone you?
Kids! You can give your life to him night and day.
Kids, then they go get married.
Married?
Why do we have these children? Better to have a pet.
You know where you stand with the pet.
I never asked for nothing.
Nothing is what you'll get. What's the matter with kids? Two.
I tried, Luke, but I failed.
Oh, you didn't, Mama, you didn't.
Don't try to pay me back, Sonny. I forgive you. So what if you're an ingrate? So long as you're happy.
I don't want to be happy.
Don't feel guilty. Just make believe I'm an old used car. Junk me. Leave me in the gutter.
I'll never leave you, never.
You heard him. You're a witness.
I promise, Mama.
I never broke promise to my mama.
Good boy.
Why can't he be like Albert?
Perfect in every way.
What's the matter with kids?
Yeah, what's the matter with kids?
Nothing's the matter with kids today.